Hey everybody, it's Emma, and this is another edition of Inside the Music. And what I love about this show is that we literally take you inside the music with the person that sings it. We feature their songs and we get to know them a little bit. And we're so glad to be able to have Chris Erasmus. He's going to be talking about some of his songs and how he got inspired to do music. We're really excited to talk to him. How are you doing today, Chris?
Yeah, hey, Emma, I'm good. Thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming on. This is going to be so much fun. I know our listeners love this because it really brings you guys close to them and they get to hear a real personal interaction. And I think that's some of the things that we always want when we listen to our favorite bands or our favorite movies. We like to feel close to the actors and the musicians that perform it. So I guess let's kind of get started with getting involved with music. What was the inspiration behind it?
Well, music for me has always been something that I've kind of done. I think I was really lucky. My grandmother always loved the kind of old TCM musicals. And I grew up in a kind of in the middle of nowhere in Victoria Falls in Zimbabwe. And it was like a game reserve or a nature area. And there was always a guitar and a campfire involved. And, you know, Hank Williams playing, or a bit of Johnny Cash. So I kind of grew up listening to it. And I was always singing and always kind of, you know, I loved being able to communicate in that way. And I think it just kind of developed. And as I kind of went through school, I played a variety of instruments and kind of ended up sticking with guitar and voice. And I've, you know, performed in everything from classical music right through to, you know, your kind of singer songwriter stuff. So I've got a real appreciation for everything from right from classical all the way to, like, you know, your country, your rap, your anything that tells a good story. And as you say, that you can relate to is always special.
Well, it's really nice that you have a wide range of genres that you've listened to. I know people always pick on me, like, what's your favorite music? But if you listen to my MP3s on my phone, you're going to hear everything from classical to death metal. So you never know what's coming on in the car. And I like that because it allows me to see moods, different stories, different everything.
Yeah, I agree. I think it also teaches you a lot. Like, if you just listen to one style of music, you can very easily get locked into certain patterns, or especially as a songwriter and somebody creating. And I think having an appreciation for a huge or even just an understanding of a huge kind of range of different styles really opens you up as a person too. You know, different people relate to different things. Why do they relate to, you know, death metal more than they relate to country? Or why would somebody relate to musical theater more than they would relate to classical music? And there's really clever writing within all of that, and really talented people within all of that. And it's just this, like, library of knowledge that you can kind of learn from, which I love. Yeah.
What's your favorite genre?
Again, impossible to answer. It depends on my mood. But obviously the country thing's pretty cool. I love country. I love blues. I love listening to good blues. That's kind of what's on the top of my playlist at the moment. But I really like classical. If I want to sit down and kind of clear my mind, I'll sit and put some classical music on. I have a real appreciation as a singer for opera music. I love listening to opera. I love listening to somebody like Eminem, who's just an amazing lyricist. So it does depend what I'm after and what I want to listen to on the day. But I at the moment, country's sitting at the top of the list.
I think the one crazy thing is that if you listen to, like, classics from the 1950s, 60s, they are so different from today. Half the people I listen to today, I don't even recognize it as country because of how different the style is and how it evolved. How did that happen?
I mean, I have a theory. Whether it's right or wrong is another story. But I think country is now so diverse. You know, like, country is what we make it. I think, and as you say, like, it's what you relate to. And I think that's what the country genre is. It's talking about, it's singing about things that are very relatable to the writer. And as kind of, you know, we've grown as a world, you know, you've got the influences of the blues and the country and rock and roll. They've really kind of bled over into country because that's what people relate to. You know, you've got guys who are rapping in country music now too. I think that's all really great for the genre, because now we, you know, Beyonce is doing her version of country, and you've got, you know, Post Malone coming through from, like, a really kind of pop rock world and putting his spin on things. I believe Ed Sheeran's got a few tricks coming up his sleeve when I was in Nashville. Everyone was talking about that. So I think that's why country has become such a global kind of thing, is because each version of country is something that relates to somebody personally. And I think country, more than a lot of other music, looks to be relatable to people.
It really does. And, you know, even when, like, we're coming into the holidays, and generally, one of the things you see, all the specials on there are the country artists. You know, there's something special about the mix between country and the holidays. I don't know what it is. I guess it maybe brings you back to your roots, probably better than pop or anything else.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I was always a big, you know, I grew up kind of also doing a lot of swings. So whenever I think of Christmas, I think of your Bublés or your Grobans kind of doing their crooning. But I think, you know, when you got people like Dolly Parton releasing Christmas albums, and, you know, I think I saw Hank Williams do a couple. I think if I look back to my vinyl collection, I saw Willie Nelson couple of Christmas things with Lily. And again, it's relatable. It's relatable music. It's, you know, it's one thing singing about, you know, Judy Garland singing about I'll Be Home for Christmas. But if you sing it with a country guitar, just the cover of that, it takes it to a place that is a lot more relatable for me and a lot more relatable for a lot of people who, you know, just have a guitar to sing, not a full orchestra. And that's what's, again, I think so magical. I think Christmas is something that a lot of us can relate to. And, you know, being lonely on Christmas or being with family on Christmas are very relatable and very close to home topics that we've all kind of grown up with. So I think maybe the time of year is maybe more relatable for everyone, which is why country kind of...
Well, when I think about music and where I got inspired with music, believe it or not, was the Beach Boys. I love the Beach Boys, and they are, to this day, my favorite group. Who is your favorite artist, and how did they inspire you?
Oh, I mean, look, the Beach Boys were great. I was lucky enough to actually see them a couple of years back now, quite a few years back now in Cape Town, and they were pretty old then, but they still rocked out. It was amazing, and as you say, yeah, that style of kind of country surf rock, those riffs and stuff are really tight with really tight harmonies. It's quite an achievement and really, I mean, I can completely understand why people love it so much. For me, the artists that really inspire me currently, Chris Stapleton's always on the top of the list for me. I think he's a phenomenal songwriter. I think he's phenomenal with finding relatable things to sing about and then sing it really well. I love his relationship with the music and with the harmony and with the guitar. And I think it's all very carefully thought out. For me, as artists, I really look up to him and really kind of keep an ear to the ground and see what they're doing. Yeah.
Well, like I said, we do have four of your songs to play, and I know our listeners are excited to hear them. We are going to be featuring We Had It Made at the end of the show because we want you guys to build up that excitement for it. So what we're going to do is we're going to play Listen Now. So Chris, tell me a little bit about this song and what was the inspiration behind it?
I wrote Listen on my great-grandmother's piano, which she gave me when she passed and I inherited it. And it's a 150-year-old upright that's been dragged up and down Africa by ox wagon. I was sitting on the farm in South Africa. I hadn't been home in a while, and I was sitting there, and I was pretty bummed because I was trying to play a venue, and they wouldn't let me play. And I just wanted to kind of have this kind of, I had this feeling of not being listened to and not being heard in a country that I spent a lot of time in, and, you know, and spent a lot of my music world in growing up, and I found it very frustrating. So I sat down at this piano and I started kind of just trying to understand my frustrations. I'm not naturally a piano player, but I do use it to write sometimes. I think it gives you a nice dynamic as opposed to a guitar breaks you out of certain chord patterns and structures. And the song started coming out just about being listened to and being heard, and the people that I left behind in, you know, when you move out of a town that you've lived in and you come back after a while, it's interesting to see where people are at in their lives. It feels like you see jump snapshots as opposed to the slow progression. So that's what the song's about. It's about being heard and about finding your space in the world and about listening to people that had all the advice, but when you came back home, they've not really done anything or gone where they thought they would, and the power of belief and taking those steps.
Well, I think that's something relatable to everybody. We all want to be heard. We all want to have our opinions count. We all want to have our voices matter. All right, guys, Listen is now playing. We are going to, after the song, have a couple of commercials. We're going to come back and we're going to talk with Chris about a lot more about his life, his writing, everything else. So don't go away. We'll be right back after this.
Don't go getting lost out there. The mountains are beautiful, but they don't care. And life lessons to yourself can help, but they can mean your health. And sometimes a whiskey or a bottle of gin helps to keep the bitter in. Watching music sing when you're away, it can break your heart, but it won't pay. One day I'll find my way. I'll stand up on the stage and will you listen? And one day I'll sing my song about a heart that broke when you were gone. I'll stand up on the stage and will you listen? Will you listen? one day I'll fall in love again. I'll get to tell you, will you listen? Like four lost boys and stories told, how you almost got Eldorado's golden. Reaching for that elusive space, instead you're singing Amazing Grace. So drink up the whiskey and grab another gin, 'cause that can be less a sin. Watching music sing when you're away, it can break your heart, but it won't pay. One day I'll find my way, I'll stand up on the stage and will you listen? And one day I'll sing my song about a heart that broke when you were gone. I'll stand up on the stage and will you listen? Will you listen?
Hi everyone, this is Emma Dowd of WREB Radio. Now you can listen to WREB anytime from your Alexa device. Simply go to our website, find the Alexa link on our homepage, and install the Alexa skill. Then, when you want to listen, just say, Alexa, play WREB Radio, and you can hear the best in talk 24/7.
You're listening to WREB, the American Rebel. Your home for unbiased talk radio and music all the time.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. We have Chris Erasmus on the line, and we are talking to him about his music. We're talking about it to him about his inspiration with music, and we're even listening to some of his songs. We just got back from listening to Listen, and we still have a few more coming up, including We Had It Made, which is his brand new single, which is going to be playing at the end of the show. We were just talking to Chris about what kind of got him inspired, some of the people that he loves that inspired him to be the musician that he is today. Now, what I would love to talk about is this music writing. It's not easy. I know that because like when you write a poem, you write a poem. When you write music, you write music. But when you put a song together, you literally compose both at the same time. So take me through your process of how you write songs, where you come up with inspiration.
I mean, you're not wrong. I think when you write a poem, you know, you say it's a poem, but I do sometimes start that way. Sometimes I'll write a poem and in my head I can hear and the lyrics and words, the word will give you an inclination of a melody. That's also something people do in acting, you know, to find a cadence or to find a tempo and a rhythm of the way somebody speaks. We've all got like a melodic kind of flow to our voice. So sometimes I will write a poem and then find a melody within that. Other times I'll have an annoying melody bouncing around my head and I'll sit and I'll record it into my phone and I'll either sit in the guitar and figure out kind of where that sits in the keys or the chords. And I'll play around with that and use what I like to call ghost words. I think Lionel Richie put me onto that. I never met him. I was listening to a podcast and he was sitting, you know, and he was sitting going, ah, but it's wild, but he's all, and then kind of find like, you know, space or like a bird or like a butterfly, and then that, you know, and kind of grow from that. And yeah, I think, as you say, it's really hard to write songs because you've always got that, is it good enough? Is it going to speak to people? Is it not just like too easy or too generic? Or so, yeah, they're all those demons that come along with it. But I really try to focus on the melody or the story and whichever one comes first, and then try apply the other one to it. And have fun with it and try it on different instruments. Or I think that's really important for me, like sitting with the piano and like playing with the piano or playing with a resonator guitar or trying to play that melody in an open D tuning on a guitar. And that really, for me, puts me in a place. And I'm like, oh, okay, what chord am I finding there? What's telling me to go there? Why do I want to go there? And then I'll break it down and use kind of more, you know, methodical methods, like, you know, synthesis and kind of chord progressions from there.
Well, you kind of just ruined the adage for me. What comes first, the chicken or the egg? What comes first, the melody or the music or the words? But that's okay. Definitely something that I have always wanted to do. I've always wanted to write a song, but I can never get it to flow the way that I want it to flow. So it basically either becomes a poem or a story. But I think one of the things that most people think about when it comes to writing is that it's got to rhyme. And that doesn't necessarily have to be. So how do you make it so that way it's what it's supposed to be, as opposed to what people think it should be?
Yeah, I've got an unfortunate habit, and I do like to rhyme things a lot. So when people, when I'm writing with people, they're like, stop, you don't need to rhyme that. So I do fall into that trap. But sometimes I'm also like, there's beauty in not rhyming something, just saying it as it is, and allowing that to be in that space. And you'll find often if something doesn't rhyme and it still works in a song, it's because the melody lets it. So if I don't want to rhyme something, or I like the way that phrase sits, or it's telling that part of the story that I want, sometimes I'm just like, yeah, that's what's going to be. And the melody will find a place, or the phrasing will find a place to raise it up to what it needs to be. And listen, I've written tons of really bad songs with terrible rhymes and tons of awful songs with no rhymes. So I think it's also just trusting that, okay, sometimes these things go, but what I like to do is put them on a shelf. I save a lot of my notebooks. I save a lot of my notes on my phone. And I'll go back if I'm really struggling with an idea, and I'll look and be like, oh, I thought that was terrible at the time. And now I'm listening to it, you know, with 2 years on, or with a bit of experience, or a bit of on a different space in my life. And I really like that little phrase. So I'll take that and see if it works. But as you say, like, yeah, rhyming's fun. But sometimes you just got to trust that not rhyming is also okay.
Now, do you have like a process? Like, I was an artist for a long time. You know, I would sit there at nighttime and I would just give them the internet. And then I would sit there and see something that would trigger like maybe like a dream recollection or something that I liked. And it would come up with a whole new process of what I wanted to lay out for my next art piece. I also have to have music playing and I also have to have it completely dark. I don't know what it is. It's something special about that. What do you do when you want to write? Is there a specific routine that you do? And where do you find your inspiration?
Yeah, great question. That's really cool. I'm sure I'd love to see your artwork. But I have two things. One, if I'm really like, you know, pressure makes diamonds, I've got a deadline. I like to work to a deadline. In other times, I think I like to write with people. I think that's really important. You know, we're in a creative industry and it's a creative process. So collaboration creatively is such an important thing. And I think in some parts of the industry, we don't put enough kind of emphasis and joy on that. Alan Rickman, who played Professor Snape in Harry Potter and is unfortunately departed, always said, you know, the idea of an actor sitting in a room and learning lines by himself is ridiculous. Each scene is a conversation. You listen. Listening is as important as speaking. And I think that's just as important in songwriting. You know, you've got to have somebody, you've got to have both. So writing with someone is that listening and speaking and responding and throwing ideas in the room and failing and growing. So I love that. So I love to set up writing sessions like that. You know, 4 hours, you're working as hard as you can, both of you, and you kind of each keep each other honest. The other way I like to do it is I love to people watch. And I love to, like, if you're sitting on a train, you take your headphones out sometimes and you listen to the conversation, especially on like a Friday or Thursday afternoon or Friday afternoon. A few people had a couple of drinks and they like to have like very loud conversations about very silly things. Actually, on the new album we've been working on, I wrote a song based on two guys talking about how, you know, there was this really beautiful girl and she was it sounded to me like she was taking them for all their money. So I wrote a song about it. I thought it was really fun, you know. So it can come from anywhere, but I do think we need to let people inspire us as much as we inspire it ourselves. I think as artists, sometimes we've been quite insular, and it's something I do too. But especially writing this album recently, and we had to kind of, we had quite a tight deadline on it. We really, I did a lot of collaboration, but I also did, you know, sitting, listening to people's conversations and letting the world around me inspire me a little bit as well.
Also, when it comes to writing songs, there are more than one instrument. Do you write each piece or for each instrument, or do you collaborate with people on that?
So I try and learn as much as I can about as many instruments. So I've played violin. I played violin for 7 years. I've taught myself very basic piano. You know, we've got such great apps and access to things on YouTube and stuff now. And I've learned as much about different versions of guitars as I can. You know, you got flat picking guitar, you got the classical guitar, which I studied a little bit with someone. The electric guitar in the Leeds over there. And every time I work with an amazing guitarist, I'm asking them questions about pedal boards and how they get that sound. And so when I go into the room, I have quite a good idea of what I want things to sound like. So working with a good producer is really important. But I come in with, this is what I want. But I also like to give, you know, I don't play each instrument. I can play, you know, enough of each one to tell people what I want. But I do like to give them space within a chord structure or a time signature and a tempo to kind of find a little bit of what they want to bring to the project. And that's why that, you know, your session musicians and stuff are so great, because you'd be like, cool, you know, this is the chord progression. This is kind of the tempo. This is the feel. This is how I wanted to sound, you know, but please, like you know, where's like a songwriter's specialty in singer-songwriter singing and songwriting, you know, a guy who plays guitar is going to be able to bring something that I can't bring because he's had that much more time to focus on it. And I appreciate that. And I love that. And again, it's that letting people inspire you in the room. So no, I don't write each thing very precisely, but I've got a pretty good idea of how I want things to go. And then I give the guys, you know, a little bit of license to kind of have a few stabs at it and see if they have a better idea.
Anyways, we're going to go take another song of yours coming up here. It's Shotgun. I don't know if that is a gun or if that's being shotgun to like a shotgun wedding or a shotgun to get into the car, like we say when we were kids and fight each other for that. Tell us a little bit about the song.
I mean, those are all very, very good guesses. no, Shotgun was one of those songs where I was sitting with a friend and I was trying to figure out, like, you know, it's like I knew kind of what I wanted to sound like, but I couldn't find that phrase that I wanted to sing about, that hook. And we were kind of like, you know, and I'm like, oh, it sounds like a shotgun. And that pretty much, you know, that ghost kind of, I talk about the ghost lyrics, that's where it comes along. And it came kind of, that's what developed the song, is that explosion that you feel and hear when you've kind of in a relationship and somebody crosses the line of you're like, yep, I'm done. That's it. You know, that, so it's kind of that feeling. It was more a feeling, and so I'm using as, it's a very metaphorical kind of shotgun of that kind of very heavy bang when you've, that's it, I'm done, cool, I'm out. You know, somebody crosses that line in a relationship. It was fun, but I'm going to leave now, I'm good, you know? So that's kind of how that song came about, and writing about like a relationship that when it turns toxic and that person just crossing the line to the point where you kind of, yep, okay, cool, I'm done. And it's that back, that shotgun sound. I always think of the shotgun breaking the glass, kind of, you know, the thing that, the straw that breaks the camel's back, so to speak.
Well, that sounds like a really fun song. So right now, Shotgun is playing from Chris Erasmus, and we'll be back to talk more about Chris and his music and so much more coming up, so don't go anywhere. Enjoy the song. We'll be right back.
Say the words, strike it through to you as I watch you fall. In slow motion, my fears for you show through it all. Am I just killing time up against your wall? You're holding back, I'm not prepared to fall. You're breaking up on me, repeating history like a shotgun. I'm done, we had fire and it was fun. Shotgun, I'm done, it's never easy living on the run. Rather be a part of that, never in chasing new memories with just time as company. Letting my bones and a wonder to drive me. Breaking ground, I'll let you behind me. You're breaking up on me, repeating history like shotgun. I'm done, we had fire and it was fun. Shotgun, I'm done, it's never easy living on the run. Rather be a wanted man, never really know where my heart's gonna lie. Like shotgun, I'm one, I always have my freedom.
Listening to WREB, the American Rebel, your home for unbiased talk radio and music all the time.
We're back. I hope you enjoyed the song Shotgun, and we have the artist that sang it right here with us, Chris Erasmus, and he's talking to us about his music career, how he is inspired to write. That's what we just talked about with his writing. So welcome back, Chris. How are you doing?
Doing good. I'm really enjoying talking about it, and it's pretty exciting here.
Yeah. That song was great. I'm sure everybody's enjoyed it. We do have more. So we have about two songs coming up here. So what I want to talk to you now about is the music industry itself. Obviously, you learned how to play the music. You learned how to sing. You were able to record music, but it's changed quite a bit. I mean, back in the day, you could not get a record out there unless you were signed to a big label. And then don't even consider thinking about getting it on radio without a big label. And that's changed. But I think in one way, it was hard to get on there, but it's also now harder because you're in charge of it. So what was the hardest thing for you to do to break through to be able to actually get your music out there?
For me, it was the self-promotion. I'm very music and performance orientated. So I'm like, I would, in a perfect world, love to think that if you work hard, you know, you perfect your live performance, you perfect, you know, the development of yourself as an artist. You know, that will kind of let the cream rise to the top. It doesn't seem to be the case as much anymore because there's so much, you know, out there, you know, which is wonderful. You can really, you know, develop your own things, as you say, and release your own stuff. And that really gives you a lot of space. But I really struggle with the self-promotion, you know, the leaning on Instagram or social media to kind of prove that you are an artist. You know, the promotion on Spotify to get streams that don't really kind of cover any costs or expenses. The one good thing that I think has come from it is that performing has become really important, and it's something I love, and something that's really close to my heart, and I love being on stage. So I think that the value of performance is becoming better because A, that's how you make your money, and B, I think people, you know, especially with kind of the way AI is going, and you're listening to kind of Spotify's with all these AI kind of bands, I think that the performing is going to become more important, and you know, that's a good thing. So the hardest thing for me was the self-promotion and still is, you know, getting out there and being like, hey guys, look at me. Whereas, you know, I really believe that, you know, working hard on the music And getting a quality product out there that speaks to people is the most important thing. And sometimes in the new industry, it's not. So
I think that it's always one of my favorite things to do is to go listen to a concert. You know, I've had the luxury of not only working for the Emily Arena, I don't even know what it's called anymore, but, you know, I got to see a lot of great bands. I've also been able to go into a festival, and I see different artists all over the place. And it really is a nice way to not only enjoy yourself, but also to experience music, because I think it's an experience. So now I remember when I was working with a band that I was like a manager for, one of the things that I had an issue with was them putting their music on their own social media account, because they kept saying, okay, well, this is a violation of, you know, your play. And I'm like, well, they wrote it. They actually sang it. Why are they giving me trouble? Do you have that problem anymore? Or is that still kind of like an issue?
It's an issue if you're trying to boost the music or you're trying to use it for promotional purposes. Yeah, it's tricky. There's like licensing things that kind of overlap. YouTube's I found specifically difficult if I do an acoustic cover of my own song. They won't always let me monetize it, which can be a bit of a pain in the ass. I know there are ways around it. I haven't figured it out myself yet. I haven't really got enough traction on YouTube for it to be a major problem at this point in my career. And I think once you get enough traction, I think it becomes less of an issue. I do think for those starting out, if you've got licensed music, it can be tricky, especially if you're licensing or you're kind of auto-licensing, you know, it's very AI run so you're not able to speak to someone to actually get help for that, which I've experienced issues with in the past. But yeah, I think it is something that, you know, TikTok is a huge thing now. They've got their own like artist platform that they've just set up. So I'm interested to see how that kind of goes. It's not really something that is a strength of mine, but it's interesting to see how that goes. You know, they're using different kind of time formats, you know, 30-second clips or as opposed to like a 3.5-minute song. So that has also influenced the way a lot of artists have released and written stuff. And I'm sure it drives managers mad. I know my managers get really twitchy with me if I don't post enough.
I mean, that's your lifeline to people, and it gives your fans the ability to physically talk to you too, which is important. I hope I'm not going to blow anything here, but I mean, if somebody emails you on social media, is it actually you that goes ahead and responds?
Yeah, it is. It is me. I think the reason I've struggled with social media so much is that a big part of what I'm trying to achieve as an artist is to be genuine. You know, nothing that a lot of the stuff I release is very much, there's very little, any even since I try to keep it as real as I can. You know, I'm very aware that it's expensive, but to try employ musicians and to kind of, you know, keep it about people and about honesty and about singing about things that I understand or things that I think about. So if people contact me on social media, yeah, it's me. If they contact me on social media about a job, what I would normally do is just say like, hey, thank you so much. You know, please reach out to my managers or something like that. But yeah, for me, it is me. And I think it is important to have that. Even if it does at times get overwhelming, I think it is, you know, people spend money that they've earned on you and spend time, which is valuable. I'm listening to your songs. I think it's important to try give a bit of that back. And I get we're all busy and we've only got so many hours in a day. So, you know, Taylor Swift probably got a different set of problems to me when it comes to social media. But yeah, I try to do that. And then we've also got a, you know, mailing list that people can sign into and get hold of me that way.
You know, I think one of the things that I've noticed in any type of art industry is the freebies. Everybody wants freebies. And at the same time, you don't want to give too much away, but you also have to make money, but you also have to get people to come and get people to listen. So how do you find the strengths and weaknesses, and how do you budget for the free stuff you got to give away, but also some of the paid stuff?
I mean, look, I always give people my time and I don't know, we'll try to help people where I can. But I think, you know, there's the difference between a professional and an amateur is somebody gets paid to do a job. Whether that's in, you know, the other thing I do is acting, and that it kind of goes for that too. It's not personal. You know, you wouldn't work for free. So we can't work for free. I've got to pay my rent. I've got to eat. And, you know, unless I'm making, you know, a couple of million per show, which I'm not, but very few people are, you know, people, you know, just have to understand that if you love music, go see live music. But you've also, you know, whenever I go see a friend play, I make sure that I pay for my ticket because I know that ticket's helping them. It's supporting them. So I think I think it's important to pay for gigs and for music, and if people are in a position to give freebies, great. But I'm not a big believer in freebies. I think I'm a big believer in supporting my friends and showing up and supporting artists where I can and showing up and being there. That's the best way to support. I think if you're looking for a freebie, there's plenty of social media stuff that will give that to you. But you also, if it's free, it's not valued. So
yeah, I love that. I truly love that. Now, what about like bartering? Because I know sometimes it's very important if they're giving some value to you and you can give them some value back. Do you believe in that? Is that something you're into? I mean, not that you would do it often, because I don't do it often, but at the same time, you know, if I can see somebody that would actually help my brand, help me, grow or something, sometimes I don't mind doing
it. Yeah, I think there's value in that. What I tend to do is, because I'm not very good at it, I hand it off to my managers, the bartering stuff. I say, hey, like, this is a manager. That's kind of your managers are there to protect your artists and protect our decision making and our brand, as far as that goes. And I think that that is very much their world. So I say, hey, guys, do you mind if I just hand you over to my managers? This is the kind of their thing. And I'm very lucky to have managers. I understand not a lot of artists have that. But again, if you need to pay your rent and you need to save for your next album or your next project. So the reality is nothing's more valuable than money. So in that sense, unless it's somebody who's going to give you a free session or a free, like I've done a lot of free singing sessions or performances for people, or that's different. But only if, it is give and take. But again, it's a manager question.
Well, I'll tell you one thing I have learned about the music industry is that when, we buy a song, believe it or not, the artist doesn't get much. And I think that's what people think, that the artist gets so much because they're making so much money, but they're literally getting pennies on the dollar. And so I know that people are upset that they can't use the music anymore so much for free, or they could download it through LimeWire. I don't know if you were in the LimeWire age, but it does hurt people. And I hope people understand how that affects us, So, it's always, if it's $1.29 for a song, it helps the artist. And that's what we want to have. So that way they can keep producing great songs for us and coming to our cities and performing. So I want people to understand, because it is important.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, it really is.
Now, one last thing about the music industry is making yourself stand out, music, art, everything. It's a lot of people can copy it. A lot of people try to take what you have and make it better. And it's very competitive, and it's also kind of like congested. So it's easy to become, to fade away. So how do you make sure that your music stands out from above the rest, so it doesn't sound like everybody else, and you have your own special sound to you? So it's like, if somebody picks up, it's like, you can hear Elvis. It's like, oh, I know that's Elvis. How do you do that? Because if you don't, you might make it, but not as big as you want to.
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. I'm still figuring this industry out, as I think a lot of us are, especially it's always changing. My view of that, though, is, for what it's worth, is I think we've all walked our own paths, and we've all kind of had a very unique individual challenges. We're all human, and no human is the same. So why would you try pretend to be someone else or copy someone? I think if you're trying to copy someone, as you say, you're in trouble. You're never going to quite be the greatest Chris Stapleton or the greatest Michael Bublé, because Michael Bublé is the best Michael Bublé and Chris Stapleton is the best Chris Stapleton. So let's just be you. Work really hard on your art. Go learn how to sing. Go learn how to sing different styles so that you can apply different things to your music. And you will find your voice and trust your voice and sing in your voice and write in your voice and write with other people. And I think if you keep doing that and keep being honest about it and keep being genuine about it, you'll start finding your sound, even if you're not trying to find your sound, because that's you. It's who you are. And that's what makes a lot of these artists, you're talking about Elvis and these guys, the Beach Boys, that's what made them special, is they were doing stuff that everyone thought was nuts because they were just being themselves. Elvis heard a sound and he heard two different sounds and he was like, oh, this is fun. Let's do it that way because it's fun. Look at Johnny Cash, he started singing gospel and then he was like, well, that's not working for me because it's not me. And then he did his own thing. And that's what made Johnny Cash sound. So yeah, I personally think trust that you are enough. And work your ass off at making each thing you do better every day.
Well, it's time to have a little bit more fun. So we have this next song coming up called Cold Train to New York. Now, I've never been on a cold train to New York, but I have been on a cold bus to New York. And I prefer my car. It's so much better, less smells and all other kind of stuff. So tell us a little bit about this song. What was the inspiration behind it?
On this song, I wrote during a kind of half in COVID, half out. And I was listening to a lot of people talking about how they wish they could travel again and a lot of places they wanted to be. I'd been in London, back in London. I'd been in New York for about a year and I was back in London and really missing it. And all the planes were shut down. And I thought, well, the coolest, kind of weirdest way to get into New York would be in, you know, kind of a coal train. I've always loved the image of you know, those trains that used to carry the coal into the cities for the power and the old generators. I say old generators, there's still a lot of coal power stations and stuff out there. So I was sitting, you know, kind of thinking about how I'd want to get there and how I'd want to travel there. And I had a friend of mine kind of come in, gorgeous vocal. She's an amazing singer. And the kind of harmonies, kind of the soaring and the traveling and the freedom within the confines of being, you know, unable to travel. I've always liked traveling by train. And I've always liked kind of the idea of doing that to New York. So I kind of just combined the two and kind of found this song and this very kind of travel-y, hard-hitting song that became Coal Train to New York here.
Well, what we are going to do then is take that Coal Train to New York. We're going to get the experience of it. And when we come back, we're going to be diving more into Chris's life and his music. And so you don't want to miss that. We'll be right back.
Overcharted plane, old story, new faces, different name. It's the missing pages in this torn novel, half the story left unsaid. There's no beginning, half a middle, sudden end. And I know it's come this far, and I know you fear another broken heart much. Sweet concessions are too big a price to pay. But I know we can make it there one day. Running down this broken track to New York, babe, what you say? Never jump you, never fly this place. And I know it's come this far, and I know you feel another broken heart, but sweet concessions are too big a price to pay. But I know we can make it there one day.
You're listening to WREB, the American Rebel, your home for unbiased talk radio and music all the time.
We are back. We have Chris Erasmus on our show today. We are dove into his experience with the music industry, his music writing, and how he even got into music. We've been playing his music, and I hope that you guys like that. And now what we're going to do is we're going to dive into your personal life a little bit more and learn a little bit more about you and the intimate parts of that. So I have to do this. I have to ask the question, the girly question. Do you have a wife or a girlfriend?
I don't have a wife. I am dating someone at the moment. It's pretty new, but it's tricky. She's also a performer, so we kind of bounce around the world a little bit. So we'll see how that goes. But as I say, early days, definitely no wife.
Well, that's okay. I mean, it's nice to have somebody with you, especially somebody in your industry that understands and how you can kind of complement each other. So, I know sometimes, like when I was working with one of the bands, nobody ever wanted to say if they were married. They always took off their wedding rings, or if they were dating somebody, they always kept that hush hush. And I think it was because of I don't know, that's logic I don't understand. I think I would be upset, but that's okay. So tell me a little bit about your family growing up. Like you said, you grew up in like campfires and everything like that. What was your family like, and how did they support you?
And my family's great. I grew up kind of bouncing between South Africa and Zimbabwe. In Zimbabwe, it was a place called Victoria Falls, where, you know, my grandfather lived with the conservation of wildlife. And so I really got to spend time, and I say in the bush, it's very much like, you know, elephants and lion and all that stuff. And I kind of, my mom's a really wonderful horse master, and she's kind of competed with the horses her whole life. So I spent a lot of time in horses and around horses. And yeah, I'm the oldest of four. I think three younger sisters, so they keep me on my toes. And the farm back home is very busy with very high achieving women who run it. And my dad who's a brilliant businessman, and they're very, very supportive of the industry. They're not in it, but they really try, and they've always got a love of music and the arts. So they've been really supportive, and I don't know if I would have been able to do this without their support. Yeah.
Well, that's good, because usually one of the kids come home and say, "Hey, I want to be a musician," or "Hey, I want to be an artist." And first is like, "Oh God, you're going to starve." Or, you know, they sit there and try to do anything that they can to keep you from doing it. But they don't understand that it is a passion. And if you have that passion, you've got to try it. Otherwise, that becomes a regret. And that is the only form of failure I feel in this world is a regret. But at the same time, you know, there's something taboo about the arts. I've been through it with my own family, and it's like, whatever, you know? So I'm glad that they do support you. Now, family means the world to me, and so do my friends. And I'm sure that they do the same for you guys. So talk a little bit about one of your favorite family traditions that you've been doing for maybe centuries throughout your family, or maybe just recently that you picked up. What is one of your favorite traditions or things that you do with your family?
I think Christmas is pretty an easy one for me. We always kind of, although I haven't been home for the last 2 years for Christmas, I'm going to get home this year for Christmas, which is nice. And we'll always kind of get together on the night before and sing Christmas carols, and then, you know, do the presents. Everyone sneaks the presents under the tree, and my dad will sit in the morning, and we each one at a time take a present, and my dad will kind of read them out, and then we'll sit and have Christmas lunch together. But because it's in the southern hemisphere, it's summer, so we have a barbecue outside, and or we call it a braai, and have the meats and all those cool things. So that's my favorite thing to do, and go home and spend Christmas with my family. It's something we did for many, many years without missing one, and then kind of this crazy arts kind of thing, you know, you're performing a lot over Christmas, and sometimes it's a bit tricky to get back, especially back the kind of the southern part of Africa.
So since Christmas is one of your favorite traditions, what is your favorite present you've ever got?
Wow. I've had some pretty cool ones. I mean, I always remember the kind of first acoustic guitar that my parents bought me. It was a terrible damn thing, because bless them, they don't know anything about that kind of stuff, but it's wild. And it really set me on the path to kind of following that kind of playing, you know, dragging a guitar everywhere I went and annoying people, and always trying to fit it in the car and whenever we went on holiday. And it was just a very annoying kind of thing for my parents to have around, you know, telling me to keep quiet because I always had this guitar. So I always remember the guitar. And my first pocket knife, my grandfather gave me my first pocket knife when I was probably younger than I, than most people would give a pocket knife to a kid now. But I grew up in a place where, you know, the men carried pocket knives, and it was a sign of respect and a sign that you could be an adult when you needed to be. So it was a big deal for me. I lost it pretty immediately, but it was more of a gesture.
Well, I mean, from where it sounds like where you live, you had lions and elephants and stuff like that. It was probably also a reason for...
I mean, look, a pocket knife wouldn't have done much.
No.
We were always using them.
Now, with that being said, what's your favorite Christmas?
Christmas?
Yeah, Christmas cookie.
Oh, Christmas cookie. We don't really have Christmas cookies, but I love a good gingerbread, man. I've always loved the gingerbread. I could like one that's not too hard. It's still kind of out the oven and soft. Yeah, that's kind of my go-to Christmas cookie.
My tradition with my mom was she made gingerbread bears when I was younger, and I still make them today. Oh, yeah. So I have the little cookie cutter, and it has little raisin eyes and little hot nose, so the little red hots and stuff like that, little heart. And I eat it in sections. If you eat like a candy corn, you got to try to cut the line exactly there, you know, and that's how I eat them.
Oh, yeah.
Same thing. I start with the ears, go to the nose, and then I take one arm off and then one leg off, and then I eat the torso. So.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
That's my thing. Cool. So another thing is how was it growing up in school? Did school influence you at all into your music career? And like, for me, it's like my friends that came out of it as well. So how did your school influence you into where you are?
I mean, I went to a kind of very traditional all boys school, but we had a very good music department. It was very classical. So in some ways it taught me a lot about singing and about performing. We did a lot of performance, but in other ways it really, I really had to learn to not be caught within that structure. It was a very structured kind of world. So as much as I think it really helped me musically, it wasn't the easiest kind of time school. I was an athlete and I did a lot of that stuff too, but I never really fit into the structure and the mold of a kind of traditional all boys school. And I ended up fighting the system a lot. So very good, a lot of performances, at a very young age, all the way through till, you know, I left. But on the downside, it was very structured and I didn't really fit within that structure. So it took me a long time to give myself permission to write outside of like literal choral music and structures and stuff like that. Yeah.
You know, one of my favorite things, and for pricing my bookshelf behind me, is that I read classical novels, and I love, my favorite author is F. Scott Fitzgerald with the Great Gatsby. What's your favorite book?
I mean, that's a great book, Gatsby, and a friend of mine was in a show, one of the musical recently, and I went to go watch it. And yeah, F. Scott Fitzgerald is a phenomenal writer. I mean, for me, it's Lord of the Rings. I love Tolkien. I love the development of the way he structures his world and the language around it. I love literature and all its shape and forms, but Lord of the Rings for me is just, it's very tough. It's tough to beat. Yeah,
it is. I've read it too. Now, do you have any tours coming up?
I'm waiting on to confirmation of my tours. I'm playing a show on Sunday in Camden, the Green Note, which is a wonderful little space in London. But I'm waiting to hear. Actually, we're about to kind of finalize the dates of a couple of festivals and tours in the next couple of days. So we'll be able to put that out soon.
Will you ever be coming to the United States?
Oh yeah, we're busy working on the old green card and the old visas. That's a little bit of a process, but we will get there once the States is up and running again. We're gonna start with that process and looking over tours over there.
Well, hopefully you come to Tampa, Florida, so I can actually come see you and meet you and listen to your music live. That would be so
fun. Oh, heck yeah. Tampa, Florida is definitely on the list. A lot of my friends are out there as performers, and a lot of the cruise ships got out there. So yeah, I'm definitely on the list.
Awesome. Now, tell everybody where they can find your music, how they can interact with you, work with you, or anything else.
Well, all streaming platforms of my music. We got a great new album we're working on that's going to be released in the first half of next year. With an amazing Scott Jacoby producing it. We've on Instagram, CJ Erasmus. You can reach me there. I've got links to all my Spotify, to my websites, to our newsletter, which we're gonna get up and going. So please subscribe to that. Give us your email and we'll let you know what's happening. And yeah, if you want to reach out to me or my management, Instagram's a great place to get a hold of me, or my webpage. And yeah, always looking forward to hearing from you guys. And yeah, really appreciate the support.
Absolutely. Well, guess what? It's time for the song. It's time for your brand new release, which is called We Had It Made. And I would love for you to be able to tell everybody about the song and what made it so special.
We Had It Made is a traveling song. It's very kind of contemplative and unusual for me. I like to be on the front foot a lot of the time with my music, but this is very much talking about, you know, a relationship that has run its course, but it's not ending badly. Sometimes, you know, that happens, and sometimes you find yourself in a different place to someone you've been together with for a while, and you're acknowledging the time you spent with that person and the beautiful moments and the crazy moments and the great memories, and you know, we had made, but it's time to move on, and I love you, but I don't love you like that anymore. Yeah.
Well, guys, that is the end of the show. We're going to be playing his song here, which is We Had It Made. You're going to be able to hear his music all throughout the months over here on WREB, and we're so glad that we were able to have him in person here talking to us about his music, his life, and I hope you enjoyed this as well. So we will see you again on the next episode, and we're going to leave you with We Had It Made. Have a good night, everybody.
When we were young, we had a magic touch. You were my world, my sky. But now it's been a while since I seen you smile, and I can recognize what we've become. When did it show? When did you know? Turn and walk away. When did it show? Gotta let you know. Like love should, and I wouldn't trade those times. What we've become, when did it show? When did you know? Turn and walk away. When did it show? Gotta let you know. Together we're fire and dynamite. You don't want the truth and I don't wanna lie. But the two of us together we're fire and dynamite. And if this is the end, one thing I gotta say, babe, we had it.